What's up? What's up? Welcome to another episode of All Over Voiceover with Kif VH. I'm your host, Kif VH, and I am thrilled to be joined by my friend, fellow voice, and on-camera actor, Scotty Menville. Scott, thank you so much for being here, man.
Kif, thanks for having me, man. I'm so grateful to be here, and you've invited me like 3 times over the years since you've had this podcast, and scheduling never worked out.
That's
and
right.
I'm so happy it worked out, because as I was telling you off the air, I've listened to every episode of this. A lot of my friends have been on, and it's a cool thing that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much, man. I'm just thrilled to be able to. I feel like we were just talking before I started recording about like some of our favorite conversations that we had heard and people that we've worked with, and how that process worked and stuff. But I just feel completely illuminated in so many ways by people coming in and sharing their stories and process, and I don't know.
Well, you're that way. Like even pat each other on the back as we're starting off and nauseate everybody. But one of the things I liked about you from when I first met you in the waiting room at CESD, our agency, was you're like, hey, I just found this interesting website that talks about memorization for, you know, if you have sides at last minute or like, I don't know. We've always like kind of throw processes back and forth. And so it is illuminating. I get, you know, some actors don't like to talk about technique and process, but I find it all fascinating. Everybody's got their own way.
Right.
And it's all interesting.
I agree. And I think I can learn. You just learn so much from people's, from not only what works for, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes, like, it was the first time I studied with Fraley back in Chicago, and he would say, like, some little tip or trick. He's got a book of tip or tricks.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what one was, like, one of the most impactful ones. But, like, it was just, like, mic proximity.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, like something that you, in the world of commercial where I was living, you just didn't, you weren't necessarily thinking in those terms, especially if you get taught, like sort of self-taught the way I kind of learned. Because, you know, I came up at a place where voiceover wasn't something that was taught or learned. And well, how did you, where are you from originally? Let's start with the background.
I'm from Los Angeles, born and raised.
Awesome.
And so I actually kind of grew up in the business. I've been acting professionally since I was 11.
Oh, wow.
SAG card and agent and all that stuff.
What was that about? Did you have the desire? Was your family already in the industry? Was it just kind of something that that you're, since I'm doing the Marie Kondo stuff, that sparked your joy? Like, what led you into the on-ramp of doing it?
My dad was in the business. Chuck Menville was his name. He passed away in 92, but he had a great, successful career. Started out as an animator, became a filmmaker, had a short film that was nominated for Best Short at the Academy Awards in 1969, became a writer, producer, filmmaker, songwriter too in some instances.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he saw something in me, obviously, and he was working for Hanna-Barbera at the time, and he heard about auditions for the Little Rascals cartoon.
Yeah.
And I had already been going to acting class, I think, since I was 8. I was pretty hyperactive in school, and disrupting the class, not really meaning to always, but just, you know, you can't resist. You mimic something or hear something. And so he's like, let's channel that. So he put me in acting class. But anyway, long story short, he heard about auditions at Hanna-Barbera. I auditioned. He brought a tape recorder home. That's how long ago this was.
Wow.
And I was a little kid. He recorded me for one of the, He recorded me for
play and record.
Exactly. So I recorded for several characters and wound up booking the part of Spanky.
Oh,
and to this day, I have my dad to thank for that, but also because he got me the audition, but the late, great Gordon Hunt, wonderful director, father of wonderful actress Helen Hunt.
Yeah.
Gordon was the main casting director and voice director at Hanna-Barbera, and he really was my champion for that role, and my little tape made it all the way to network. And I booked it, and Gordon called Helen's agent and said, you got to come to the session. There's this kid who doesn't have an agent. He's talented. So my first audition, I booked the gig. I get in the union, and an agent shows up at the session and wants to sign me. So
that's amazing.
It was pretty cool.
That's amazing. And then, I mean,
I know there are people out there that are hating that right now, but it's just, it was amazing. And it wasn't until maybe 5-6 years later that I went, wow, I was super fortunate. Because when you're a kid, you don't know. You're like, yeah, okay, I'll read on this thing. Cool.
Right. Yeah, right. But the thing is, too, you know, you can get in the door, but the most important thing is, like, you can get in the pool, but can you stay in it?
Exactly.
You know, and it's not like they're handing you roles for things. You're always constantly auditioning, and you're always having to constantly So I just saw a thing that Bob Bergen had posted on Facebook today about, like, I've had to audition for Porky like 5 times.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to have been able to do it, but you know, you are always, no matter what stage you are or how much people assume certain things about where you are in your career, you're constantly having to adapt and strengthen your skill set.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. It's always a process of growing. Robin is one of the characters I've played on Teen Titans and now Teen Titans Go and in some Lego DTV direct-to-video movies. And sometimes I've had to audition for Robin and booked it again.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they call with a straight offer and I get to do it. And sometimes I've auditioned for Robin in other areas and haven't gotten it.
Yeah.
And, you know, our buddy Rob Paulsen talks about, I don't know how many Emmys he's won, but the guy's won a bunch of Emmys and he's still out there auditioning and, you know.
That's it. That's the nature of this gig, yeah. And that you are always, and I think it's really what makes you better. You know, I think auditioning is that, I don't know. I love it. I love auditioning. I love the crucible of it. I love the pressure in a way.
I love it too. And one of the things, you and I both do on camera as well. So usually a lot more work goes into prepping an on-camera audition than a voice audition because you have to be off book and all that stuff as well.
Right.
So I heard a pretty well-known actor one time in an interview talking about how he'd put in 6 hours on something for an audition and didn't book it and felt like, well, I just lost 6 hours of my life. And I don't feel that way at all. Yeah. I feel like if I put in 6 hours on an audition and I don't book it, that's 4 or 6 hours that helped make me a better actor for the next one that I'm going to book.
That's right. Oh, that's so true. And that's the nature of your relationship that you're building with casting directors.
Sure.
That it's not so much about, and you know, by that extension too, like ad agencies and like, if you read on a spot for Evian water and you might not be exactly what that casting director is looking for that moment, they're still, if they still like your read, but you happen to skew towards, we're looking for someone in their 40s and you sound in your 30s. I'm looking forward to hearing him for, you know, when I do Energizer I randomly select products from the air. But you know what I mean?
And you know, I mean, you can sort of, I guess if you're auditioning in person, you can sometimes get a feel for how you're doing in the room. But a lot of times with voiceover, as you know, we're auditioning out of the agency or we're auditioning out of our home studios and we just send them out into the ethers and you feel like you did a great audition and sometimes you never hear anything and you can start to second guess that. But I remember booking a radio commercial one time and I came in and the two ad guys said, we're so happy to have you. You've almost been our guy 5 different times.
Oh, wow.
It was between you and somebody else and for whatever reason, it wasn't you and we're so happy to have you here. So that's 5 auditions where I could have been going like, I thought I did great and I didn't hear anything.
I'm a suck.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm terrible. I'm wasting my time.
Yeah, all that horrible negative self-chatter that, you know.
Exactly. And it's so worthless. And learning how to just say, you know what I sent is my best for this today.
Yeah.
And it's going to be all right. And trust that, you know. You've heard me say it all the time. Like, I don't believe that this is about rejection. I think it's about not being selected for certain things and that people truly are championing you.
Yeah.
Like, when you hear that a casting director, when I booked Denny's, someone told me that the casting director, Kim, at O'Connor Casting, like, found out I booked it and cried.
Aww.
You know? And you're like... Why? Why was she's put me on so many things and I've come so close so many times. Why on earth was she moved that I landed this national campaign? And then you start to go, because they're pulling for you.
Because she saw something in you all those times.
Right.
And was happy to see you have a victory.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's so important, I think, to remain mindful of everyone who's involved in the process.
Yeah.
And like having someone like Gordon Hunt as your champion, who is like, this kid's got not only what I want for this show, but there's more here than just the right sound.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially for, God, a legacy character like Spanky, even at 11, there's still that, you know, that you know how it is. If there's a big product, there's expectation.
Sure.
That you face. How is that something that you, how do you prepare to handle like a character, for example, that has that kind of weight attached to it.
Well, at 11, I handled it, I was a grubby little skateboarder kid, and I told my mom, I'm going to shower the night before so the director likes me. I don't remember saying that, but she said that. As far as, like, I don't know, another legacy character, like, so I play Robin. That's a well-known, iconic character.
Yeah.
Try to learn as much as you can about the guy, and I'm still learning things about him. And then at some point, you just have to just attack it like you would any other role.
Yeah.
You know, what is it about it that makes this guy tick? What are his fears? What are his strengths? What gets him excited? You know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Going back to the not about rejection thing.
Yeah,
also,
yeah.
Do you know Jack Angel? Wonderful.
I don't.
Actor. He's been in the game forever, but I think he's the one that he always talks about. It's about selection, not rejection.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Which is basically what you said.
It is, but way. It's but I think a slicker way. That was. Tell me about, so you said for you rode that train for like about 5 years. So going back, so you do the Little Rascals and you start doing more and more cartoons with Hanna-Barbera. Or what was that experience being in there in the kind of, 'cause we're roughly the same age.
Yeah.
I came up watching, really falling in love with animation, and a lot of the shows that you worked were shows that were very inspirational to me and to my brothers, and I mean, a lot of the people in our audience. So what was that environment like, and both in doing that work, but then also like being in there? What was Hanna-Barbera? What did it smell like? Like what was the vibe of that place?
The vibe of Hanna-Barbera was very, well, I mean, as a kid coming in, it seemed like a very positive, very creative place. Also, because my dad was a writer producer there,
okay.
I would sometimes come in when I wasn't recording and I would get to go look at the guys doing character designs and look at the guys cutting sound effects. And, you know, on the walls were pictures of Hong Kong Phooey and Jabberjaw and, you know, Fred Flintstone and all this stuff. So it was really cool. And also as a kid, you know, I'm there, you know, I'd been in acting class, like I said, for 3 years before that, but there's nothing like learning on the job. You know, working with Peter Cullen and Frank Welker and BJ Ward and Don Messick and all these guys. So, I mean, that helped me build up my chops pretty quick just by watching these cats.
What were some of the things that you picked up from those guys?
Well, Frank Welker taught me how to turn my script pages without making noise over the other actors' lines while they were talking.
Uh-huh.
He taught me how to carefully take it from the corner and lift it over. So that was a technical thing.
Uh-huh.
And then I just learned a lot of stuff that's not really tangible, I guess, but like instinctual, like timing, delivery, how to hit a word, how not to, I don't know. Just, I admire you guys who can kind of teach and put this stuff into words, because a lot of it's instinctual for me and I don't always articulate it the best way, but
I understand.
I think,
I totally understand.
I just learned a lot of instinctual things from these guys.
Is it about trusting your impulses, or looking at a script and going, oh, I see what they're doing there, or this sounds funny, or this sounds right, or this is just what this character is doing to get through his day?
I think it's all of those things, and that kind of depends on the character. And, you know, sometimes with comedy, sometimes you need to be cerebral and look at, do I need to lift the line here? Is this a comedic turn? Is this a misdirect? What's going on here? And sometimes it is very instinctual, but you do improv, you teach improv, know how important it is to trust your instincts.
Isn't it fascinating how you really do have to approach comedy with this, like, it's a combination of that freedom and spark and joy and, like, you know, finding the rhythm of it, but then really finding the rhythm and going, like, how can I maximize the rhythm of this line? Like studying, Sherry and I were talking about iambic pentameter the other day.
Yeah.
She was working up a monologue for an audition over at a theater. And
did the monologue require her to do iambic pentameter?
Yes. Wow. And it required her awareness of it.
Okay.
In an interesting way, similar to what you're talking about with timing, I think.
Okay.
She said, if you look at one line, and it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? Is that pentameter?
Yeah.
That was right. Okay. But if the line goes ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, and it leaves it hanging or gives you an extra syllable beyond, what Shakespeare is telling you there is that thought is not a perfect couplet. It's not set right. There's something wrong. And it's in the poetry of the line. So in that, it gives you the freedom to choose what is the emotional content of that line.
Wow.
what's wrong? You as the actor decide. But then if it's ba-bump, 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 and it is set, then it is determined that it is clear and polished and powerful and, like, this is what it's supposed to be. So, like, there's this room for this interpretation. It was on Mark Maron's podcast where he was talking to Paul Schaefer.
Okay.
Who was telling Miles Davis' story about playing Around the Root when they were doing the when they were playing We Three Kings and the soundtrack to the movie Scrooged.
Okay.
Where Paul Schaefer was playing ba 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 ba, and then Miles goes, no, play Around the Root. And he was like, play Around the Root. And Miles goes, yeah. Don't go. Everyone's going to expect you to go to that last note. Ba 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 ba. He's like, instead go to ba 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 ba. Like playing around where you're supposed to go. The expectation is you're going to go there, but you're going to dance. You're going to mess around. You're going to explore what that space is, right?
Yeah.
That hearing that little story and why I took up this real estate to share that story too is like, I feel like that's such an interesting way of bringing some life and a space for your improvisation, a space for your comedy.
Yeah. You and know? I think that example right there is what makes, you know, you get 20 actors, 20 good actors to read on the same thing. You're going to have 20 different interpretations of maybe that line because everybody's going to bring their own thing. So that dancing around the root or whatever you call it.
Playing around the root.
Playing around the root is, I think, what, you know, your individual instinct can bring to it and bring something different, hopefully. That's an interesting story.
I agree. That's super cool. So when you mentioned in your time frame about 5 years doing that space. What happened next? What was the next shift for you from transition from kid to young adult, adulthood? Were you what was that process?
Thank goodness, man. Knock on wood. I've just always worked as an actor. Uh-huh. So voiceover and on camera. So I just kind of kept on working and auditioning for different things and booking different things. And, you know, now here I am, a grown up still working. So
that's so great.
Yeah, I didn't really answer your question.
No, that's all right. That's okay. Well, like,
I don't want to bore the listeners with. So when I was nine,
I understand what you mean, though. I mean, like, if there's to be able to maintain this transition between ages and to be part of that stuff. How did you get yourself into the on-camera world? What was that experience like?
So the agent who signed me from that voiceover job also signed me for on-camera and started sending me out commercially, and I started booking commercials, and then that turned into sending me out for guest roles on TV shows and that sort of thing, and so I started booking on-camera stuff.
Awesome.
And then, you know, from there, I wasn't with that agent forever, wound up going to another one, but I was in the mix and had some credits and that sort of thing.
Do you find, is there a difference in your approach between your on camera and your voiceover work? And what is the nature of the, or like, is, do you have a, how do you approach things differently if you do?
I feel like with voiceover, usually pretty quickly, if I'm looking at sides to audition for something, pretty quickly I can kind of figure out, like, okay, this is that guy. I've got a strong take on this, and whether it's right or wrong, I've got that take. Theatrically, on camera, I seem to need to, my process is to take a lot more time, try different things, explore more. But it's all basically the same thing. Uh-huh. Who is this guy? Who's he talking to? How does he feel about who he's talking to? Yeah. How does he feel about what they're talking about? What's the proximity of the person he's talking to? Are they 10 feet away or are they right next to him? You know, all that stuff that we start to break down when we look at something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how do I feel about, I don't know, whatever. All that stuff I think I just said. How about you? Do you approach it all the same way or is it different?
I feel like I would, I don't know if I would have more success if I did or not. Sometimes, like, I'll feel like with the on-camera stuff, I feel like I get it quicker.
Oh, with the on-camera stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think it's because the space I'm in right now is essentially, I'm in a co-star, occasional guest star space. And for those of you who don't know the distinguishing nature of that, like a co-star is like a 5 or 6 line guy. Guy comes in, well, Captain, things look pretty rotten, but you know, yes, sir, 4 or 75. All right, thank you very much, and have a great day. Thanks for stopping by Texaco, whatever that might be.
Right.
So I can look at that character and go, I know exactly what his purpose is, what he's doing, why he's there, you know. Whereas in a animated piece, like even if it could be the exact same type of character.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's because I want it more, or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if that gets in the way, or I have to just do, I don't know.
Interesting. I want to touch on what you said about the co-star thing.
Yeah.
For on camera. Sometimes, as you know, those are harder to audition with than a guest star, because there's not a lot there.
There's very little.
You got to make strong choices and figure it out and build a life so that you don't look like just an actor coming in and saying, your car just got towed, sir, or whatever. You got to come in and have a whole life. And whatever work you're putting into that, man, you sell it. Like, I came up to you after I saw you in Nightcrawler, and I said, dude, did you have a bunch of scenes that got cut? And you said, no. I said, you had like a whole life there for that dude.
Oh, thanks.
And like, so yeah, whatever you're doing with that approach, keep doing it, man.
I love it. I wanna bring more of that to my VO stuff. I do. I mean, I do feel like
you're freaking Han Solo, man.
Yeah, I'm Han Solo. So I have to stop like I'm learning to be like, you know, don't sit here and undersell yourself. You right. do it. You have to kind of, you know, accept a certain level of, you know, you look at your IMDb credits or your page or your level of work and go, you know, I mean, as much as you're like audition and get prepped and go on to the next thing, there is that space of, wow, we lucky few, you know, in a way of being able to carry the legacy of these characters on.
Absolutely, man.
You know,
I feel very fortunate all the time, especially. Oh, it's never lost on me. I'm always feeling so fortunate to be in a room with some of the most talented cats in the world. I mean, the best of the best come to New York and LA.
That's right.
And sometimes I'm sitting there looking around the room at who I'm working with going, man, this is a great day. I get to play with these guys and ladies.
It's the greatest feeling in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and to learn from them and to play, in a way, just play jazz with them and read music and stuff. Or, you know, I don't know why it's gotten so musical. It's when did you achieve a level? Do you have like a level of fame where that's something that you're mitigating for like cons and stuff? Or like, what's that experience like?
I don't know.
Is it hard to describe?
I don't really know if I have a level of fame or not. I honestly have no gauge on that. I have people who follow me on social media, and I'm grateful that they follow me. And a lot of them say very positive, wonderful things, which I dig. And, you know, sometimes I'll get recognized in public and either from voiceover or on camera.
Yeah.
Usually the on camera stuff is like, dude, do you work out in my gym? Or did we go to high school together?
We totally went to high school together. Yeah. That's it. Do we go to the same church?
Right.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really. I mean, the fame thing is, first of all, I don't even know if I have fame or not. And secondly, that's not why I'm in it. I'm in it because I just love to act and to create with wonderfully talented people.
I feel the same way. I felt like when I was younger, because it seemed like an unattainable thing, that it was something that I was craving. But the more kind of recognition that comes along with it, it's, I got followed at a Michael's.
Like, oh, you did?
Yeah, by like a pack of girls in a shopping cart.
And from it was, Richie Rich?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a really crazy experience. And But it was also like, I'm glad I experienced it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was like, you know, chasing that, I don't know that that's, I feel like that's a dead end in a way. Like being, like you're saying, like going to chase the experience of connection and storytelling with some of the greatest people working today is incredibly thrilling.
Absolutely. And you know? You hit on a word, connection. I guess I don't know. To me, I'm not at that level, but I to be at like some mega star level where you've got millions of people who are knowing your name and all that stuff, but you can't interact with them because it's dangerous or whatever. That does not interest me at all. That seems like it would be a prison for some of those people.
Yeah.
But sometimes I get to go do Comic-Cons, like San Diego Comic-Con or whatever, for a show that I'm on. And you get to meet some of the people there and you hear some of the stories that people will share, like very personal stuff about what a show means to them or what a character means to them.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. When you get to look into somebody's eyes and they're telling you how much something that you've been a part of has meant to them. Like that's beautiful. So I don't know if that's fame, but that's a connection thing.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
I agree. I feel like that having that, I don't know, there's this responsibility that comes with this stuff, that there feels this sense of, if you're going to play these characters and you're going to be telling these stories, that you maintain a level of openness as what am I trying to say? It's a dialogue, you know, that we're having together, but it's also with the audience.
Yeah.
And that, I remember having a conversation with Sherry about this, like after a show where she's like, I want to do my show and leave. And it's like, people are like, they want to come and go, you know, you gave me this breath of air and I want to give it back. And it's the kind of the yin and yang of the conversation.
Right.
And what's cool about the social media space we live in is being able to have a little bit of that in certain contexts, but what you get to experience at a con or something like that is really glorious.
Yeah.
And it's something else, man.
Yeah.
It's something else.
Although going to Sherry, you know, I don't know what her role was in that particular thing, but you know, some things are in a play or whatever can be emotionally draining, and you may have left it all on the field, as they say.
Yeah.
You may not have anything in you to go talk to people.
I think
right
that's 100% the case for her, in particular for that show. And I think stuff like that, especially when you kind of got to dig deep. It's one thing if you're just going, bye, Menon, and then people are like, that was amazing. but if you're really diving deep into doing some intimate stuff, and especially like just exposing yourself emotionally on stage, or in this work too, like there can be a real like. You close those windows, you know, to protect yourself in a way too, and you need to do that.
Sure.
I don't know. It's a trip, man.
Yeah.
What we were talking about you know, we had mentioned Charlie Adler at the outset about
I love Charlie.
About the kind of experience you had, like both working with him as an actor and as a director. You I don't want to put words back in your mouth.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
But we weren't rolling.
Before we were rolling, you had mentioned that you'd taken a workshop with Charlie. And we were both talking about how we love Charlie, and I grew up working with him as an actor in animation, but in my, you know, as I became a young adult, he directed me on a series called Brothers Flub, and I was one of the two Brothers Flub, and I learned so much on those 26 episodes, I think we did, or whatever, being directed by Charlie in that season. It was just amazing. Every day was like getting paid to go to school. The dude is so sharp as an actor, but so fast and sharp as a director.
Do you recall like what some of those things were? Like how did you transform as an actor and during that experience?
I think a lot of what I learned from him was about timing and pacing, and like with rhythms of a character.
Yeah.
You know, ba-da-boom, 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 ba! You know, hit the punchline. And, I mean, it was a while ago that I did it, so I don't remember anything specifically except that we laughed a lot and I learned a lot.
I love how fast he makes you work.
Yeah.
It's like, just from the work we did last fall, it was just, you'd go in and start making a strong, like, well, listen, we have to have a conversation. Stop. What are you doing? You're boring me.
Yeah.
Go, 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 go. Love it. But like,
I was doing a job a couple of years ago, and an actor in the room was on, he or she was on their phone, and Charlie stopped and said, "Pretend like you care." And obviously they did care. Obviously this person did care, but Charlie was just like, he's like, "Come on, put the phone down."
As you've, how do you, if you get a script, what's your process? Like you get a script, an email, audition comes in for, let's say, for an animated character you've not played before. And I want to do a parallel experiment with video game, because do you approach things differently between those two based on the format, or do you feel more like process is process and where it's being delivered doesn't really matter?
For animation and video game, I kind of put it into the same process. Promo or commercial is a little bit of a different process.
Sure.
Animation or video game, I approach it the same way. I just look for as many clues as I can about the character.
Where do you find those clues? Like, what are you looking
Hopefully
for?
In the description that they give. Now, sometimes in video games, they give so much of a description that it can be confusing to me. So I will actually just start ignoring stuff and just highlight keywords in the description, because they'll go back to, you know, his parents were born on the planet, blah, 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 and a meteor took them away to there, blah, blah, but he wasn't alive then at this point. And you're looking in the sides, you're like, there's nothing about planet, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I don't need to know that for these sides. It's just confusing me. But I will look through at certain keywords. He's headstrong. Okay. Boom. Or he's unsure of himself. Okay. Well, and also, first of all, what's the age? You know, look at things like enthusiastic, positive, optimistic, or nervous, doesn't trust anyone. I look at things like that. And then I'm a physical actor in voiceover, so I almost always stand when I work. Yeah. And depending on which character I'm voicing, I will take on different stances, whether it's in an audition or a character that I'm doing. I have a particular stance that I do for Robin on Teen Titans and Teen Titans Go. I also am recurring on Marvel Spider-Man on Disney XD as Doc Ock. I take on a very different body language for Doc Ock.
What a blast.
Totally, it is a blast. Totally different stance. so I'll kind of put that into it. But as far as process, I'll just go through, look for those kind of keywords for personality traits, and then I'll look at who's he talking to, okay? How does he feel about this person? Oh, he admires this guy, but this guy never gives him attention. Okay, so what do I need to do when I'm talking to that guy? Do I pick up the pace so that this guy doesn't turn away from me while I'm talking to him? Or do I not really care about this person I'm talking to? And can I talk slower and kind of just sort of swallow the end of my sentences? You know, whatever. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. And then what are we talking about? How do we feel about what we're talking about? That's sort of my general process. And then I start to fine tune and nitpick, and also get technical. Do I need to lift the end of this line, or do I need to drop down? Do I want to ad-lib something here or not? What's the project? Are they open to ad-libbing or are they not? If not, boom, I'm sticking to the script.
How do you know how much they're open to ad-libbing or not? Is it
sometimes
trial and error?
Sometimes I don't, and I'll take a risk, but yep. I don't ever ad-lib just for the sake of ad-libbing.
Yes.
I only ad-lib if I feel like it can add something to the line, because some skilled writer who's worked very, very hard on this has written this line, and I'm not going to come in and try to change it just to make a lateral move.
Yes, yes.
No point in that.
Do you read when you read the whole thing down, do you start with just description and start looking for words that resonate with you or make sense, or do you read top to bottom all the way through the script, get the sense of the story, then go back and get a sense of the character, or is it more, once I've read the script, I get it, or is it go... you know what I mean? In terms of order, what's that part of your approach in terms of what you just described?
It's a good question. And I just had several auditions that I did over the last couple of days that were for animated things.
Mm-hmm.
And I treated some of them different from the others. There was one that I read through once only, and I'm like, I got this guy.
Yeah.
Now, that could be me being arrogant and stupid, but I felt like I had that guy.
Yeah.
There was another one where I read the description over three different times before I even started looking at the script. Then there was another one I read the description once, read through the script once, started writing down as I was going, writing down notes, instincts. Oh, I'm going to write a gasp here. He should gasp at the end of this. Went through it once and then came back after I had the gist of it, read it again, and might have said, oh, okay, it's not appropriate to gasp there, even though that was my instinct, cross that out. Here's my instinct that I jotted down over here. Yes, that's a good one. I'll keep that. And then you start to fine tune stuff. So I kind of attack each one differently because each project is its own beast.
And they're going to give you a radically different thing based on how much they want to.
Yeah.
Even if it's like Soldier.
Totally.
You know?
And you mentioned Soldier. So like in the case of video games, I'd mentioned before, sometimes they give you so much description. Yeah. Sometimes they give you none in video games.
Yeah.
You're reading for Soldier. He's 20 to 30 years old. Okay?
And he's a soldier.
Does he want to be there? Is he afraid of battle? What's right. his deal? Doesn't say anything about that.
Right.
So you start to look at the lines and just make a strong choice and go.
Yeah. It's so wild. That's fascinating to hear, like, how, what your technical process is, too, of, like, how to find, I hear people talk about clues, but never, the specificity that you just outlined of, I'm looking at this word and discovering whether this word leads me to make this choice, or this choice.
Yeah.
Like, that was really insightful.
And sometimes, I think instincts are important. So a lot of times on my first pass reading through, I'll jot down an instinct. Then when I come back to it after, I think I'm repeating what I just said, but you know, sometimes the first instinct isn't the best after I've gotten all the info, but I don't want to forget the instinct. So I jot it down as I'm going.
That's great. I do a similar thing with the on-camera stuff. Like, that's like, Amy Linden has this whole series where you take the copy and go beat by beat. But the end of the day, the script looks more like you wrote it than anything typed on there. And the amount of time you spend with every piece of copy, it's like you were talking about before. It's like I spent 4 to 6 hours doing that, you know. I don't know. It can be exhausting, especially if it's like 8 p.m. You've got the kids down and you're like, okay, now it's time to finally get to my work.
You know, my on-camera approach, my sides look like that too. And as a matter of fact, I was at an audition, I guess, about a year ago.
Uh-huh.
And some casting associate said, oh, we ran out of sides. Can I copy yours for somebody else? I said, it looks like hieroglyphics. You're not going to want mine. I showed them and they went, oh, okay, thanks. I'll ask somebody else.
Right.
But I also feel like doing that for the on-camera stuff somehow makes it more mine.
Huh.
I feel like, okay, this is more my character because I've put my stuff, my mark all over this, you know?
Yeah.
I've never said this to anybody before. Then maybe, I don't know. At the end, I will write down how, in the top corner in pencil, very small for an on-camera thing, I'll write down all the time I put in on it. Okay, I put in 4 hours and 35 minutes on this. And I think that's a way for me.
Yeah.
All it does is trigger something in me as I walk in to go, okay, I did my homework on this. I'm ready to go. I did all I could before this Tuesday at 3:15 audition.
Yes. Yeah. That's great.
I don't know why I told you that.
I think that's important to keep track of that, because I honestly can't say how much time I put into something. And, you know, I don't know if it's equivalent that when I did Han Solo, my prep to do Han Solo was like, can I find his voice? I'd never done it before. Can I find it? And I spent a good solid hour trying to find it. And then, like, working through and recording and re-recording and re-recording.
Yeah.
I remember I was working on Fameless and the audition was due at 9:30 and it's 6 o'clock and I'm parked at a rock quarry a half hour before call time.
Wow.
Double, like, listening to what I had recorded the night before going, I can beat that. I can beat it. And just having to tell myself, dude, stop. It's okay. It's your best right now.
At some point you have to walk away, but that's interesting, man.
You know?
And dude, you're so good at the voice match stuff. Some of you guys, like, I've voice matched celebrities in some films, but I feel like for me, I know right away. Like, I either have this guy or I don't, or I can work for 3 hours on this guy and never get it, or I can put in a little bit more work and nail it. But some of you guys are so flexible, man. You guys are like, I don't have it yet, but I'll get there. You know, I admire that.
I don't know if it's I don't know what that is. It's just, I think it's just hunger, or like it helps when you like the guy.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of range that you've got. How is your ear? Do you when you've done it? And we've run into each other like at ADR sessions, you know, super fun.
Yeah, we've come in like I'm coming and you're going like, right, exactly. Who are you doing in this? Oh, I'm doing so and so.
Oh, sweet, high five.
Yeah,
all
right. Yeah.
So like, what's your process for that? Do you kind of be like, you know what? I know that's not in my wheelhouse, or...
Well, if I know it's not in my wheelhouse, I just kind of know.
Yeah.
And I would rather pass on it than turn in a lame audition that's gonna be pretty bad compared to guys in town who can nail it. Right. But when I feel like I can nail it, then I will listen to as much as I can of the guy. I will actually watch clips of the guy to see, oh, he sort of has his top teeth over his bottom lip when he says his S's. Okay, I'm gonna do that. Like, I don't know, there are certain tells with physical characteristics of these guys that help. I've voice matched a few celebs and it helps. I go on YouTube and sometimes I'll even watch them not acting, but just being interviewed.
Yes.
Which seems to help me.
I agree. That's really, really helpful too, just to get a sense of their natural cadence. Like, I had something for a British guy doing an American voice and trying to figure out where was his American accent failing.
Wow.
And where can you creep in a little bit of his Britishness in his phrasing and that kind of stuff. But when you start getting into that space, then you're like, you know, there's probably a room I could clean. You know what I mean? There's something I could really...
I don't know, though. That may be what sets you apart. That's true. Gives you the extra little edge to book the guy.
Well, I hope so.
That's anything awesome, man. That's cool.
Do you, with your commercial and promo approach, are you active in those spaces as well? Do you kind of like... Or do you live almost exclusively in the animation, video game, and on camera world? Or do you kind of like send me what you got and I'll swing for it? Like,
well, yeah, hopefully send me what you got and I'll swing for it. And we're with the same agency, and our wonderful agents will send me stuff. I seem to book more animation and video game stuff commercially and promo. I do work commercially and in promos, but the bulk of my work seems to be animation, video game.
Yeah.
That said, I still step up to bat and audition when they send them.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for any time I'm getting sent a promo thing or, yeah.
Do you have a different process for that kind of work?
A little bit. It's more technical. And there are a couple things, and I don't know if I can speak for them, but I did a workshop with Maurice Tobias, who had some wonderful techniques that I use, and then our friend Vanessa Marshall.
Oh, gosh.
And just in talking with her, I've stolen or borrowed a couple things from her technique that are also in line with Maurice Tobias's for that promo commercial stuff that has helped me, but I don't want to speak for them. So,
I hear you.
But yeah, there's little like technical things for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I just did a bunch of, a few months back, they had us doing a slew of promos for Cartoon Network in our characters from Teen Titans Go. And that was a different process. That's just me going and being Robin, you know, but reading words like tonight on Cartoon Network.
Right. What's been your principal difference? I can hear the difference between when you're playing Robin on like Young Justice and stuff versus Robin on Teen Titans
Go. I'm not Robin on Young Justice.
Oh, you're not on Young Justice. I meant the original Teen Titans.
Yeah.
So like the difference between how you approach, I mean, obviously the styles of the show are radically different.
Right.
But like, what was your process in ramp? Teen Titans came first and then Go later.
Yeah.
What was your process in transforming who Robin is? Or did you use your original Robin template character that you created and then modified him for that space? Or is it a totally different character in your world?
It's not totally different, but it's pretty different. It's a big departure. So we did 5 seasons of Teen Titans, which was a half hour dramatic animated series. And then we had like 5 years off and Teen Titans Go came around. So I came into the first session. We didn't have to audition. Thankfully, our producers said, I want those same 5 actors.
Oh, wow.
Different producers from the first original Teen Titans. They said the show will not work without these 5 actors. And they've said that in interviews. Pretty cool.
That's so amazing.
I'm grateful to...
Grateful.
We're all grateful to Aaron Horvath and Michael Jelinek and Sam Register. So, but yeah, I came in to do that and... Teen Titans Go is faster paced. It's a comedy. And so I needed to bump it up. So pretty soon Robin wasn't as cool. And the funny things were coming from watching Robin lose his mind. And so there's a lot more screaming. He speaks a lot faster.
Uh-huh.
And on the original Teen Titans, Robin never contracted any words. You wouldn't say, we can't do that. He would say, he wouldn't say, that's a bad idea. We can't do that. He'd say, that is a bad idea. We cannot do that. Teen Titans Go, that's a bad idea. We can't do that.
That's so great.
It's a lot more hand gesturing and gesticulating with Teen Titans Go.
Well, it's also like it's really fun to see your, like you mentioned earlier, how physical you are as a performer when you're doing voiceover work, and to see that now.
And I'm not unique. I mean, well, Tom Kenny is. Oh, sure. Dee Bradley Baker. A lot of these cats we work with are very physical.
It's what was neat about it was how it was as defined and sharp as the lines of the character. Like your movement was just, it was as if you were composing or conducting. It was very, very cool.
Interesting.
It was super cool.
Our animators on Go will come in and watch us record.
No kidding.
Yeah, and sometimes get inspiration from how we're moving, doing the characters, and then animate it, which is pretty cool.
That's so smart.
Yeah.
That's so smart. And like, I really love how what you do in the present will inform the future as, and you know, a lot of times, I don't know if this is the case for you, but I often feel like, okay, I'm doing my thing and I'm that's my thing. And then I'm out.
Yeah.
And I either forget about it or whatever. And you don't think about the impact that your presence, the moment that you did, was a suggestion for other people to go, did you see what he just did? Well, that was really cool. Let's do da 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 da.
Yeah.
And unless they tell you, you might not know it, but like that very thing of like the artist coming in and watching you guys work to inspire how these characters are going to move, how, where their focus is going to be.
Yeah.
Even facial, you know, essentially, you know, brilliant facial capture with hand-drawn animation, you know?
Yeah. I mean, because these guys are helping to build the performance.
That's right.
They're helping to create the visual on this.
That's right.
But yeah, it is weird to, you know, we record in these little small, well, you know, usually small booths around town with just our director and a couple producers and a couple writers and our castmates. Yeah. Or if in the case of a video game, just you and a couple people on the other side of the glass.
Right.
And then you kind of forget about it and move on to the next thing. Okay, I'm done. So tomorrow morning I've got to audition for that thing and I got the commercial to audition for. And okay. And then it always trips me out when like if somebody will hit you up on social media or you'll meet somebody at a con and they're like, oh, that thing you did and such. And you're like, wait, what? Oh, wow. You saw it? How did you see that?
Yeah.
Like, because it's out in the world. It just, I don't know.
And it was 10 minutes of your day.
Yeah.
It was just this moment that existed.
Yeah.
And I just finished doing an audiobook. And like, there's some of these moments that happened where either I'd get choked up or kind of the emotional heart of a moment, and then that moment's gone, and then you go, and then we go to Zanko Chicken and go get a kebab for lunch and cool down a little bit.
Were you playing a character or the narrator?
I narrated, but then there was, this book is different.
When you got choked up, were you the narrator?
Yeah.
And did they keep that take?
No. We'll go back. Yeah. This chunk I could not get through. I've gotten choked up in, you know, because like in a video game, they'll use it. Like,
sure.
I did some stuff in The Walking Dead and like, and that, there was a couple pieces where I didn't have to work to get there emotionally. It was just really, you know, beautiful stuff. And the guys at Telltale had already recorded Melissa, so I was acting with her recording.
Yeah.
Which was just, it was a remarkable experience.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times in voiceover, you can't fake it on camera. But in voiceover, we can bring the emotion to sound like we're crying, and you're feeling the feelings, you're feeling the sadness, you're keyed into that, but you're not always crying.
Yeah.
There was one thing I did one time, an anime film called Tekken Kinkreet, I played a character called Black in it, and I remember there was a part where he's talking about the other character, White, and I don't remember the lines, except I remember saying White cries. I think it's my thoughts that you're hearing, I haven't seen it in a while, okay. White cries, but I actually cried on that line in the booth. And they used it in the thing. And it's cool when that happens, you know?
Really,
like, wow, that sounds really weird. And the reason it sounds weird is because I was actually crying on that line.
Yeah. I love how that stuff, you know, it's like Walsh talks about the True Tell. And like, I was just listening to that episode with Dave just the other day. And
that's a great episode for anybody who hasn't heard it.
Boy.
Yeah.
The stuff he says, and it's right on the heels of the election, and there's just so much going on in that. But like, that when the emotion becomes so much that it just modifies, that's where you're feeling it, and that's where it's true, and that's where it's really, it's not that you need to cry on everything or
no.
And like, you know, and like I said, we went back over and redid it. It took a while to get through it because it was like, I mean, It was tough, man. It's like the book hasn't been released, so I can't talk too much about it, but it's one of those, it's happened in other, very rarely where it happens in a book where I'll get too choked up.
Yeah.
But this one was something else.
Wow.
But like, I love that feeling, because I don't get that often, you know?
Right.
Where, especially in the commercial space, where it's like, you know, except Nike spots. Nike spots will always get you.
Hey, your tag's coming in at 1.3. Can you shave it down to 1.1 and keep crying?
Okay, thanks a lot. Right. hang on. Whenever you're ready. Yeah. But we do have people coming in. Right. All right, no problem. I'll get
them. Wait, I'm sorry. Hang on. Yeah, the tuna salad for lunch. Okay, Kip, okay, go. Okay, cry.
Thanks. Guys, I'm sorry. The talkback is still on. I can hear you guys in your conversation.
Oh, man.
Oh, I love the insanity of this job, man. It's great.
It is crazy. It's never the same day.
What are some of the moments over the course of your career when you reflect on stuff that have struck you as being, I don't know, transformative, but like, and not even favorites, because favorites are different from top moments.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I could say, oh, favorite moment from X and so. It's not even my favorite project, but one of my favorite moments that happened, just to share, was like, it was an audiobook. And it wasn't necessarily a really big deal. And it was around kind of what we were talking about.
Yeah.
But it was a book called The Bright Edge of the World. And three different narrators were doing chunks. So the chunk I was doing didn't have anything to do with what happened. But I was reading this section. And then the mixer, the engineer, Dennis Kao, over at Illiterati, or Literati Audio, stops me. And he's weeping.
Wow.
And I'm like, are you okay? He's like, I'm sorry. He's like, you just said something that paid off the other part of the story that was really, really emotional, and I'm going to need a minute.
Wow.
And it was such a cool moment to be completely unaware of how it was going to affect the audience. Because so often in that context, it's like, that was a little slurry. Let's go back.
Sure.
Have you done a book?
Yeah, a little like here and there. Yeah, it's some heavy lifting.
So it's like, it's that feeling of like, okay. But I mean, that moment sticks with me still of like, you know, it's just cool and surprising.
That's a beautiful moment.
What are moments like that you've experienced?
Well, I'd have to say one that comes to mind, a moment that really touched me was I recurred on a TV show back in the day called The Wonder Years.
Yeah.
And they sent my character off to Vietnam. And then the last episode I was in, my character came back from Vietnam the next season and was having a hard time fitting in. And they find my character. There's a big high school football game, and they find me on the baseball field, the empty baseball field, in my underwear, crying. And, you know, it's like, what happened to your clothes? And I say, nothing seems to fit anymore. This guy's having trouble adjusting to life back in the States after being in the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And it was a crying scene and this and that. And when I finished the crying scene, I think his name was Skip Cook, the key grip. I think he was the key grip on the show. He came over to me and he's like, just want you to know. He's like, I was a Vietnam vet and so-and-so. And he's pointing to crew members around. He's like, so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so were all in Vietnam at different times. He did two tours. He did one. He did, you know, whatever. He's like, we all think you're doing a great job. You made us proud. I was like, dude, like when you just said that, that's the first thing that came to mind. That was like, I don't, you know, I don't need a casting director to go like, hey, we brought you in because of that episode. Like, that's all I needed right there.
That's right.
And then another cool thing, I did a movie as a kid that I had a, you know, pretty big part in. I was in there for the whole shoot, and I met, there were a lot of kids in this movie, and I'm still dear friends with a lot of those guys to this day. So that's awesome. A special thing. Like, you just never know where this business is going to take you,
that's
man.
That's right.
My friend Patrick Day and my friend Andrew Woodworth and some of the other cats from this film, although those are the two guys I'm closest with, but especially Patrick Day from a movie I did when I was a kid. We're like just tight friends, you know, 30 years later.
It's the greatest.
From something we worked on as little, you know, snot-nosed kids, man.
It's so great. Like those moments that, you know, while what we're making is this product that people enjoy and consume and have a completely different experience from, like, I feel like my relationship to those kids doing Richie Rich, of like, how do you go into this process as the adult in the cast? And I was resolved to be like, you know what, I'm going to make sure that I treat these guys like I'm not their dad. I'm not their camp counselor. I'm their castmate. And I'm their older castmate. And I've had relationships with guys who are much older than me on shows and and plays that we've done and that kind of stuff, that where they mentor in a different kind of way than a parent or a director or a showrunner, you know, or even a, you know, even a prop guy who's like, you know, kind of there, you know?
You know, I remember being a kid actor, and I remember I did a series, Johnny Quest, with Rob Paulsen. I was Johnny and he was Haji.
Oh, man.
And he was a grown up and I was a kid. And I remember Rob and I remember Frank Welker on other shows and some of these guys treating me with what, like, that type of relationship. Not that they were above me, that we were equal actors. And it means a lot to a kid actor when you can do that. You're there to give advice if they ask, but you're not there to parent. And
right.
Yeah, that's a special thing. That's cool that you did that for those kids.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I'm really glad. Sorry that hit me. But like,
oh, dude, don't.
No. It's okay. I do this all the time on the show. So
this
it's fine.
Is beautiful. Don't apologize for like, your emotion, man.
No, like to
you're
know
an actor.
That...
You're being open right now.
Oh yeah, that's true.
There's so much stuff in life where we have to where we have to put up the armor and be a tough guy, man. And I love that you're being vulnerable with me right now.
Awesome,
sorry,
man.
I interrupted what you were gonna say, but I'm just touched by that.
No, I appreciate that. It gave me a moment to get my composure so I could get through what I wanted to say. So I appreciate that. I truly do. Like, there's that, you know. Knowing that the impact you have in this context is something that you as a grown adult working in this business have been able to nurture because of those relationships that you built early on, you know, gives me hope for these kids as they move through the industry, which can be, as we know, just as much as this has been, you know, kumbaya and love and this is a great business, it's also got its... certainly got its challenges that we've all struggled with.
We could do an hour podcast on all the negative things about it. But
that's exactly right.
There's enough of that out there. So let's focus. People don't want to tune into that. So let's focus on the, you know,
that's right.
The glass half full here.
That's exactly
Who
right.
Who wants to tune into two guys complaining about it? Look, man, I'm not, right. you know,
that's
I'm
exactly
not,
right.
I'm not burying bodies. And, you know, there's a lot of rough jobs out there, man.
That's exactly right. So thank you for sharing that, dude. I really appreciate that. Radically shift from that, just because it's a thing where you have a consistent character that you're playing with consistent work, but you're also in the video game space, which can be vocally stressful.
Yeah.
What do you do to protect yourself so that you can deliver the integrity of the character that you've established and deliver the integrity of whatever character you might book, and the vocal stress that's associated with what you're doing for Robin. Like, what do you do to take care of yourself?
So there is actually a lot of vocal stress on Robin. On Teen Titans, the only time I would feel that was doing the fight scenes when we would come in and do ADR.
Yeah.
But Robin's like screaming top to bottom in some of these episodes on this one. And I'm not complaining, but I'm grateful that we record on Fridays always. I have like Fred Tatasciore turn me on to this Chinese syrup, which I'm sure you probably
Ning
have.
Puck bing
dun. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was the most racist thing I've done on the show so far is try to recall its name. But yes.
I don't think that was racist. You were just trying to pronounce it.
And I think I got about 60% of the syllables correct. Yeah. But it's literally like $4 syrup that you can get at most Chinese grocers in town.
It's great.
Yeah.
I'll take that stuff. I'll try. I didn't always do warm-ups, but I will do warm-ups before vocally stressful gigs, before I'm doing a video game tomorrow. I'll do warm-ups, you know, driving in on the way there.
Yeah.
And I bring tea with me. And this is a big one, though. I've been at parties with my wife, and it's loud, and everybody's talking like this. And I've told her, I'm like, I got to go. Hmm. My voice was already, like, a bit taxed from a gig this week, and I've got a gig tomorrow. I can't hang out here. And because I think that's the toughest is being in a bar at somebody's birthday party for 2 hours and talking at that level. That'll blow you out. So sometimes you just got to bow out and go home and be quiet.
I agree.
But I don't know. Do you have any tricks to preserving the chords?
Don't do karaoke. I gave up karaoke.
Okay.
When you go to a concert, don't sing along, lip sync.
Yeah.
I did that when I went to go see U2. In Chicago, and I was at that point was already working a ton, and I was like, I know every song, I want to sing along, and if I lip sync and don't aspirate anything, it was fine.
Yeah.
There's no substitute for rest.
Yeah, that's true.
And like, if you've got the other part of it too, and this is warm-ups, and I'm guilty as hell of this, but I really want to. I think with since I'm sparking joy, I'm gonna bring it back anyway. Is that warm-up game? Warm-up game meaning the game of it's not a game. You know what I mean? Doing warm-ups, but not doing it just before. Or just the day of, or knowing I've got a thing, but making a daily practice of it, like yoga, like workout, whatever it is, and making that, because it's something that you can actually do, freaking anywhere.
Yeah,
and I
and I'm saying yeah, and I don't do that.
Yeah,
but,
me neither.
I'm thinking of our friend James Arnold Taylor, who's got an incredible range, who can do these high kid voices like I can, but can do these low guttural things, and I think he does his warm ups every single day. I think he's told me that.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Buddy, so. I'll tell you, Eric Arsenault, never met the guy. He has a series on YouTube.
I know about it because my wife does those. She's a singer. So,
they're
yeah.
Great. They're so great.
Yeah.
And the range that you get out of it, you will get, you know, that great textured morning voice that you, when you wake up and you're like, hey, honey, how are you?
Yeah.
It's like your sexy voice.
Right.
And you got that, like, the gravel on it without having to hurt yourself.
Yeah.
You can have that at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at will.
Wow.
And I did it. I committed to doing it a couple years ago. I remember talking with America Young about him and going through all of them, all the exercises, including like a vocal fry exercise.
Okay.
But like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, going over to LA Studios, getting ready to go do some, you know, Norwegian dwarf character.
Yeah.
And having my morning voice in the afternoon.
Wow.
When in my mask. Like not having the chest resonate at all. So like that stuff, that works.
That's cool.
And something that I think if people are diligent, will help protect and give you that longevity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like clear coat.
Yeah. You know? On a side note, I thought of something else
to
protect myself. There have been times in my booth at home where I'll start to do a take of a character and I realize that my take on this guy is hurting my throat. And I realized, not going to do that because I don't want to book this guy and possibly have 13 episodes where I have to do this and I can't sustain it.
Right.
So let's take a different tact because if it's hurting you in the audition, it's going to hurt you on the job.
That was what...
At least me. I'm saying you. But
no,
I'll
you're
speak
right.
To myself.
That was what I had a conversation with... I want to pronounce his name. I just sent him an email because I want to get him on the show too. Jamie Mortadello. Do you know him?
No,
He's a video game director. I worked with him on Horizon Zero Dawn. We talked that very thing of like, at the end of the day, yeah, you want to give 110%. Give me 110% of your performance. I'm not asking for 110% of your throat. He's like, you control what your top is.
Yeah.
You control what that limiter is. And as much as we talked vocal stress leading up to the strike and all those other things, at the end of the day, you have to be your own limiter to say, that's beyond where I feel I can go. If this job is calling for that kind of stressful work, like the most vocally stressful thing I thought I had ever done with BioShock was not. When I, after getting, I did a game for Telltale where I was getting choked out by Batman. That was the most vocally stressful thing I've ever done, was getting choked.
And was it a lot of takes, a lot of lines getting choked? Or
no, it was just so severe. Wow. It was like a couple lines squeaking past this choking, you know, and you're just committed.
Sure.
You're just in that moment. And,
yeah.
And if you don't keep one part of your animal brain a little bit in the foot of, hey, that's going to hurt or that's going to bleed. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know there's a lot of guys who spit blood and cough blood up and stuff like that. It's part of the territory.
Yep. I got a buddy who does a lot of monster voices and has and smokes cigarettes. He's gone out to have a cigarette and spit up blood.
Oh,
I'm laughing only because I feel for him, man.
Yeah, right. Oh, man.
You know what I just realized, for however long we've been talking, at times I've been like talking loud because you're about 6 feet away from me.
Right.
I'm realizing I should know how to work a mic. I could just, well,
so
Chief, it all started when I was 11.
Right. This is how it was when we were back over at VoiceOver, at the other place, at Global Voice Broadcasting.
But, did you have to play it in the mic?
Well, the mics were right in between us, but
okay.
this placement is really nice, and it gives plenty of room, And I can see you fully.
Yeah.
And you can bask in my glory.
Yeah.
And it works out perfectly.
Rocking the Superman shirt.
How can people find you on social media? Are you active on social media?
Yeah. There have been times where I've gone dormant, but yeah, right now I'm active and enjoying it.
Awesome.
You can find me on Instagram at Scott Menville, and you can find me on Twitter at Scott Menville. And I know a couple years ago I had a Facebook imposter. I'm not on Facebook, so if there is my name, that's not me. But
good.
Instagram and Twitter at Scott Menville.
Awesome. And then are you doing any? Do you know if you're doing any panels or any of that kind of stuff coming up at like either WonderCon next week, or are you anything at Comic-Con where people can meets? Are you doing meets and signs and stuff, or not so much?
You know, for the last we're not at WonderCon this year. We've been there pretty much every other year for whatever. I've heard rumblings that Teen Titans Go may be coming down to San Diego Comic-Con again this year. We've done it every year in the past for the last several years, so I don't know. It's not confirmed. I just heard rumblings. Yeah.
Great.
So.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Dude, this was just freaking delightful.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you on the show. And
hey, can I plug one thing that not a lot of people know about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd love that.
I'm on a Netflix animated series called Stretch Armstrong and the Flex Fighters.
What?
And I play Stretch Armstrong on it, and not a lot of people know about it, but the people who do seem to dig the show. So it's
That's
a really
great.
Cool action show, kind of a throwback to 90s style cartoons.
That's so great.
Cool.
Did you have a Stretch Armstrong when you were a kid? Do you remember the toy?
I did not. I think I was a little bit too young for that, but I know about it.
We're like a year apart. That was maybe I think we were either 7 or 8, and that was the gift of like, and the thing, and the ads made Stretch look like he was like Plastic Man,
right.
In reality it was like you could get him about that far.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like a stress ball.
Right.
But like, I'm so excited to see the show, man. That sounds fantastic.
This one's a totally different design than
awesome.
That. One cool thing about this show is that since they knew it was for Netflix, they end everyone kind of on a cliffhanger.
Oh, awesome.
So hoping that you'll watch the next one.
That's fantastic.
Which is kind of interesting. I've never done a show that is written as an overall season.
That's so great. Ah, dude. Scotty Menville, thank you so much for being here, dude.
Kiff, thanks for having me, man.
You bet.
I appreciate it.
And I appreciate y'all listening. I appreciate Juice Studios. Thank you again for your hospitality and for making all of our voiceover. The other way around. All of our voiceover is home at Juice, not making Juice all over. You get what I'm trying to say. I'm out of here. Peace.
In the words of Kiff, you get what you get and you don't get upset. Claim victory and depart the field.
Amen. This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and give us a positive rating. It truly helps. Follow me on Twitter at KiffVH or on Instagram at KiffVH or on Vero at KiffVH. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon. Claim victory and depart the field.
Werewolf?
There.